You're listening to Mind Over Markets, a podcast on trading psychology to help you build a bulletproof mindset. Here's your hosts, George Papazov and Mark Borscht.
Hello, trade pros, and welcome back to episode 49 of the Mind Over Markets podcast with myself, Mark Borscht, and
George Papazov.
What a milestone. Almost at 50.
What a milestone indeed. The big one's coming.
The big one is coming. Let us know what you guys think we should do the 50th episode on. But in the meantime, let's discuss the topic of today's show, shall we? Today, we're going to be discussing how to strike the right balance between overtrading and undertrading. Now, we're excited for this episode for a number of reasons. One in particular is that we're playing around with a new format for this show. And that format is taking emails that we receive and making a show out of it. And so this topic actually comes from an email that we received. And let me read out the email. Obviously, we're not going to throw in any names, but I'm going to read through this email and then we're going to spend the rest of the show kind of dissecting what the person wrote and how we can help them out. And the idea behind this is that you get some value out of it as well.
It's kind of like a created for you by you.
Yeah, approach.
I love this idea and I'm really excited to comb over this member's inquiry because I think this is a common one. I don't think this person stands alone whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so I salute the person for emailing us. You know, we got to call you the person.
Yeah.
We should just call him Peter. Just come up with a name so we can reference. But anyways, I salute the person for your bravery.
You'll know who you are.
Yeah. And for the ability to open up and ask this question, honestly, this is big.
All right. And so the email basically starts off as such. It says, I'd like for you guys to potentially do a topic on overtrading versus undertrading. And the email goes on to read, personally, I lean towards more undertrading. I've noticed that what causes this for me is derived from two aspects, psychological or technical. One thing which triggers me is that overtrading can be spotted easier, whereas undertrading, it gives me the impression of being a more subtle phenomenon. I daily review my journal and can clearly see where I took a trade based on FOMO or impatience, or if I was reading the market structure incorrectly by being fixated on a certain bias. But I do struggle with defining undertrading versus disqualifying an entry in real time. Once I spot myself in real time undertrading, how do I refocus on the next best trade? How do I journal an undertrading session? Because once a pattern has happened, I guess it's more obvious to evaluate the most profitable or probable entry. I know it may sound like a paradox, but I was hoping you guys could share a bit on your experiences during the podcast on how to improve the undertrading psychological aspect without possibly becoming an overtrader.
Wow.
Great question, Peter.
Wow. Peter, this is a phenomenal question.
Yeah.
His name isn't Peter by any miracle chance.
No, his name is not Peter.
Okay.
But I guess we did identify the gender. So, Peter, great question. And, you know, this is something that it's quite common. It's quite a common question. And it's something that a lot of traders struggle with is identifying that fine line or that right balance between what is too much and what is too little. All right. And so what we're going to do with this show is we're going to define both. All right. We're going to define what is overtrading, what is undertrading. We're going to speak on how to identify that in real time and how you can kind of journal that after the session. And then finally, we're going to offer some tips and advice on how you can actually fix overtrading or undertrading. So let's go ahead and get started with that one. And so one of the most important considerations for any and all traders is one of the most important things for a majority of traders is to determine the frequency of their trades, how frequent they're going to be trading. And this often comes time when you're really deciding the type of strategy that you're going to be applying. Do you want to be a scalper? Do you want to be a day trader? Do you want to be a swing trader? Or do you want to be a position trader? So this, depending on your style, that's going to be relevant to how many trades or rather the frequency of the trades that you take. And so obviously as day traders here, predominantly day traders, we're going to be focusing more so on the day trading aspect, but it will be relatable to those that are swing traders, position traders, because at the end of the day, regardless of your style, you can be over trading and you can be under trading. Even if your strategy calls for only a couple of setups a month, you can still definitely be under trading by all means, right? So what we're going to look at right now is the fact that too many or too little trades can potentially affect the trader's profitability. So it's really important that traders take the time to evaluate how much they're trading and if they're possibly over trading and under trading their strategy. We're going to jump into that shortly, but first a quick message from TradePro Academy.
Thank you, Marky. Really appreciate that. Today, I want to talk to you guys at TradePro Academy about the opportunity that's coming up for you. So we have an election in just over 2 weeks' time coming up by the time this podcast is released, right? We've got a lot of volatility coming out, right? We're getting into year-end seasonality. There's going to be a wealth of opportunity for you within the market to create the kind of success that you're looking for. But to get started, you want to be able to be in the right place. By getting the right tools, the right education, and surrounding yourself in the right community, you'll be prepared to take advantage of the opportunities coming up. Don't trade alone from your bedroom because it's hard and way less fun. Join us at TradeProAcademy.com and get started today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that message. Make sure to check us out at TradeProAcademy.com, guys. And let's get back to the episode. So, as we mentioned, we first have to identify what is overtrading, what is undertrading, in order to be able to really give you guys an idea of how to identify that in real time and how to fix it. So what is overtrading and what is undertrading in reference to, you might be asking? Well, it could be in reference to your plan. What is your plan based on, right? If you have a certain amount of trades that you plan for a session, are you under that on a consistent basis or are you going over that? What are the market conditions like? Are the conditions, you know, ample for good opportunities? Is there high volatility or is there low volatility? All right. And depending on the type of conditions you have in the market, that is what is going to be your marker, I guess. Your rule of thumb, your standard, what's it called? A benchmark.
Exactly.
If you will. That's the word we're looking for, a benchmark. So you'll have to be able to identify those things and you've got to be able to recognize changes in volatility because your strategy and your plan will have to change based on if there's good volatility or not, right? You don't want to be stuck trading a sideways or a range market strategy when the markets are trending, right? And you don't want to be doing trending strategies when the markets are moving sideways, all right? So
yeah, so that's one thing, Mark, that this is very important here, right? When you say overtrading or undertrading, what I wanted the listener to take away from this is that your plan isn't something on, you know, hey, this is my plan, so this is what I need the market to do. Your plan's more reactive to what the market is going to do to begin with and the conditions that you're given, and your plan is how you're going to navigate those conditions. And so when you're saying overtrading or undertrading, it's important to realize that it's in reference to what? It's in reference to how much volatility is there because as traders, volatility is opportunity. So if there's a lot of volatility in a session, meaning there's a lot of movement and you have one trade, you know, you're certainly under trading, right? And if there's no volatility and you have 20 trades, then you're over trading. So it's important to know that there's different parameters and metrics. Like if the S&P 500 is in a 100-point range, you know, 10 trades isn't a lot considering that there's a lot of movement on an intraday basis. But if we're in a 4-point sleepy summer range in August, 10 trades could be too many. So it's important not to get absolute about this. And what the important part is to read volatility and then to define what over-under trading is based on the context of the day rather than just come out with an arbitrary, you know, 10 trades is too many. But too many for what? How much opportunity was there? And I think that's the hard part for a lot of newer traders is that it's kind of like a moving target.
Yeah.
Right? And the other thing I want to mention is it's easy to call it overtrading or undertrading once the day is done, yeah. Right? Like, oh, I way undertraded. Well, it's a real-time art and it's important to work on identifying the real-time market condition and adjusting your trading to that rather than looking back at the end of the day and saying, hey, I overtraded, because that's obvious. You'll know. But as you get screen time and practice, you'll start to sort of get a feel for it. But until then, we're going to give you guys some tips on how to measure volatility. That way you know when you should turn on the trade. It's like a gas pedal, right? If you're in traffic at 5 p.m. and you're driving the Lamborghini, you rub it and out comes the Lamborghini in a bottle. If you're at 5 p.m. in traffic, you can't floor it, even if you want to. If the road opens up north on your drive to the cottage, now you can hit the gas pedal a little bit and have some fun, right? It's the same thing with the market conditions. When do you hit the gas pedal and when do you let off? And I think that's what's important to determine how you should trade, how much you should trade, given the context of the opportunity in the marketplace.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a great point that you bring up, because, you know, over trading or under trading, it's always relevant to something, right?
Right.
Like you mentioned, it's always relevant to the market conditions, right? So, you know, in my trading plan, for example, when conditions are relatively quiet, when it's not high vol, you know, 3 to 5 trades is a decent place to be at. But then if volatility starts picking up and I only have 3 to 5 trades, then you might look at it arbitrarily and say, oh, well, that's right in line with your plan. But that's not in line with what the conditions are and the opportunities, right?
Right.
So if I, on a, you know, standard day, would normally take anywhere between 3 to 5 trades, and then volatility picks up and I take between 3 to 5 trades, I'd consider that under trading because
right.
I'm relating it to the market conditions, right? So like Georgie said, it's more of a dynamic target than it is something that's static. And like he said, it's very easy. Hindsight is 20/20. So it's very easy to look back at your session after the day is done and say, man, I overtraded that. The difficulty comes in recognizing in real time, you know, what kind of volatility to expect, right? And then trading accordingly. And that's what we're kind of going to get into here. And this is all based off of Peter's great questions. So
thank you, Peter, yeah, for getting some really good discussion.
Exactly.
Going.
Thank you, Peter. So the next question is how to measure volatility. All right, how to measure volatility. And here are some quick tips. Tip number one, it's going to take a little bit of screen time. All right. Every market has its own personality, you know, characteristics, nuances, whatever you want to call it. Whether that's the S&P 500, whether that is crude oil market, regardless of the market, right? So screen time is what's going to help you create a more accurate measure of volatility. And so depending on the market you're trading, you're going to get a decent idea of what you can expect based on a number of variables. And I'll let Georgie go into the first variables here as it relates to futures markets.
Yeah, so when I'm trading futures, you know, you have to understand what you're looking for to get, like, what do you want to do? You want to put trades in. But in order to put trades in, you need some volatility or some movement. So one of the things I look for is the overnight ranges. So let's say I sit at the computer at 9 in the morning. I'm prepping for the open at 9:30. The first thing I look at is what are the overnight ranges, high and lows? Because if we escape above the high or below the low, we're going to certainly open up some volatility. How come? Because from 6 p.m. of the prior evening in futures until now, if you're opening near the opening range low, let's say, for example, or the overnight low, rather, for example, that means in the last 12 hours or so, we've traded above this level. You know that if we drop below that level, anyone who's long in the session as you're coming in is going to be forced to liquidate with sell stops, yeah, right? And so when we break that overnight low, you know volatility is coming in, and now that's when I turn it on. I'm coming around the last bend of traffic. Everyone's like taking a right into their driveways, and now I have an open road to floor it on. That's when you got to go. And I think that's the problem, is the traders don't know when to go. And there's a moment where you wait, boom, now you got to start acting. And it's one of those like extreme, you're either 0 or 100. And I go from 0 to 100 real quick. We got to give credit to Drake. And so when we break an overnight low, it's going to force liquidate the longs. If we break an overnight high, it's going to force liquidate the shorts. Anywhere in between those two ranges, I'm usually a little bit more tame, I'm more patient. But if those two ranges are 100 points apart, right, you may not need to wait until they break out because you already have a lot of volatility. So it's a twofold factor for me. How thick or how wide is that range? If it's wide, there's more volatility. You could come in with a more opportunistic mindset and shoot some more bullets than just a couple, right? That's where you have more trades. And if one of those levels is broken, that turns on the volatility. Another thing that I look at is the session trading volume. So every morning, you'll notice the S&P 500 futures trade a certain amount of volume. Typically, it's around 300,000 on average, right? If we have 180,000 contracts that traded, then this could be a slower start to the day. So I'm going back to the more defensive mode. If we've traded 400, 500,000 and there's a big news event coming out, all right, or there's some buzz going on in the market driving sentiment, you could be prepared to shoot a few more bullets. It's like going to the woods to hunt, all right? If there's a report that says in this 400 kilometer radius, there's one deer, how many bullets are you going to pack? You ain't going to see the deer. Yeah. But if you're like, you know, this is like high tide, gonna be a whole bunch of livestock running around, you're gonna come prepared. And that's kind of the approach and analogy that I use for futures trading.
Yeah, I agree. And I would just add one more thing as it relates to the futures side of things, since that's what we focus on predominantly here. And that, to me, I also like to look at the prior day highs and lows. So if during Globex or even before the market opens, we're above the prior day high and the overnight high is above the prior day high, then that to me says, all right, we have the potential to trend today. And the opposite would hold true for the prior day low. If we're below the prior day's low and we are trading below the Globex low, the overnight low, then that to me means if we're below the prior day low and we're still trading near the overnight low, which is below that level, then that to me means if we get below that overnight low, we could start opening up and trending to the downside. So that's one of the other ways that I also consider volatility. Yeah.
And all of this too, it's like, guys, that's why we have a trading room. It's hard to explain a lot of this stuff. Yeah. If you're a visual person on a podcast, come out and see what we do in the trading room. Like, you have 14 days to request a refund and we'll give it to you in full, whatever the reason is. There's no risk to you, but that's why we don't spend technical time talking on the podcast. We focus more on psychology, those kind of things. But, you know, check us out in the trading room. You'll see a visual representation of what Mark said, and it works really good.
Yeah, thanks. And then as it relates to stocks, you know, some of the things that you can look at as measures of volatility would be your 52-week price range, your 52-week high, 52-week low. Generally, the larger that range is, the more volatility there is. Another thing you can look at, I think Georgie mentioned here, the implied volatility as it relates to options.
Yeah, it's the options chain underlying. So
the options chain underlying volatility. You can also look at the beta of the stock. And finally, you can also look at the ATR, which is the average true range of the stock. If you see the average true range is increasing, that means volatility is doing the same.
Beautiful. And now, let's take it back to psychology aspect. Because I just wanted to give you a quick little intro or a deep dive of how we measure volatility. That way you now know, it hopefully got some gears turning for you to realize, hey, I need to categorize the volatility before I categorize myself as an over or under trader. Because it's in comparison to what the opportunity is in the marketplace, and volatility is opportunity for us. So let's talk about, let's start out with overtrading. So the way we're going to do the rest of this show is, we're going to focus on the cons of overtrading, and then we're going to do the cons of undertrading and give you guys some real-time tips, some tips on how to fix these in real time as you're at the platform. All right, so let's start out with the cons of overtrading, Marky. What are some of those?
I like it. All right, so overtrading. I think overtrading, if I were to compare the two, I would say overtrading is the more dangerous one. And the reason is for the following reasons here. Here's some of the cons. Number one, if you are overtrading, you are abandoning your trading plan and the trades are no longer based on a tested plan. They're more based on emotional feelings, like your gut feelings and instincts. And as doing that, in doing so, that opens it up to making more trades, all right, which eats up any potential profits with excess commissions. And some of the other cons of overtrading are that you become vulnerable to closing out winning trades too early, or you become vulnerable to really handcuffing your trades by placing stops far too close to the entries, right? And what can result from that is that if you're taking trades where you're placing the stops too close and then the trade ends up working out, you might just start chasing that, all right? That's going to increase the number of trades that you take, and that's going to increase your costs. And then the similar thing would happen if you're closing out your winning trades too early, right? Especially because as humans, we tend to anchor onto historical feelings or historical facts or experiences. And so if you get into a good trade, you might have been patient and waiting for it, and then you actually get executed on it, and then you might be in a couple of ticks profit, and you say, you know what? It's not moving as quickly as I want it. Let me just close this out for a small win. You do that, and then the market comes back to your level and then blasts off to the direction of your complete take profit. You might see that and you might say, oh man, you know, I had that there. I should be on this trade. I should have XYZ amount of dollars in my pocket, but I don't. So you start to chase it. And now you're chasing the trade that should have been. And that's what leads to overtrading, especially if you chase it and that first trade that you take after seeing the one that you had being a winner is a loser. That sets off a little bit of frustration. I know in my own experiences, whenever I did that, that kind of tended to piss me off.
Yeah.
Because I knew I should have had that trade. I had it. I closed it out for a little bit of money. I should have this much. So now you're chasing. And oftentimes when you're the one that's chasing it, you're the one that's gets caught buying the tops or selling the bottoms.
Love it, Murky. And all that, what it could lead to, another con of overtrading is really like burning out your mental capital. And if you, even though you start the day with 3,000, let's say, and you make it to 4,000, then you drop back to 3,000, even though net, on a net basis from capital standpoint, you're neutral, it's not the same as not having traded. Neutral doesn't mean you took a day off and went to do something energetic. It means you burn through a lot of mental capital and you have nothing to show for it. And the dangerous part of overtrading that could kind of lead to is you get trader burnout. And if you're experiencing trader burnout, you want to look at episode number 32, how to cope with trader burnout, and, you know, work your way back through that. But that's one of the big cons, is that you're doing a lot of activities, but you're not getting rewarded for it. And it's got a real nasty way of killing your confidence in yourself, in your trading plan, all right, feeling kind of crappy regardless of what the outcome is. And, you know, it could spiral out to cause a lot of negative emotions outside of trading as well. So be very careful with this one. It's a dangerous one. The obvious con is you're going to burn through capital.
Yeah, burn through capital. And like Georgie said, right, it's, I think as it relates to overtrading, or rather as it just relates to trading in itself in general, is that, you know, less is more. And especially if you're doing day trading, you know, commissions are going to eat up a chunk of your profits if you're not aware of the fact of how many trades you're taking, right? So this is why we say it's important to have a general idea of how many trades you want, because you want to be at that point where the trades that you're taking, the profits you're making, the commissions are, you know, just a minimal aspect of that, right? Whereas if you're taking a lot of trades, even if you're up on the day, you know, a good chunk of that profit can be going towards paying your broker. So is all the effort really worth it if the result, you know, is maybe a couple of dollars? Do you want to burn through all that mental capital, get yourself tired out, you know, get yourself flustered, and then at the end of the day to see that, you know, on the statement, you paid a whole chunk in commissions and you're basically, you did all that work to be flat, to be almost where you started off at the beginning of the day.
It's crappy just, feeling. Yeah. I know it well.
It's a crappy feeling, and I'm glad you mentioned feeling, because the experience that overtrading brings out is not a fun experience. It's a frustrating experience, and like Georgia said, you can really burn through your mental capital quickly. So if you start off the session, for example, let's say 9:30, you're already five trades deep by like 9:35, 9:40.
That's a sign.
Yeah, that's a sign, right? It's only been open for 5-10 minutes and you've already blown through 5-10 trades. You know, you're blowing through that mental capital quickly, and more likely than not, you're going to have to make a couple of good trades in order to get yourself, you know, back to flat and then back to green. And the amount of effort it takes to lose the first trades and then to make it back is going to weigh on your mental capital. It's going to weigh on your decision-making, your real-time decision-making. And also it's going to weigh on your mindset. So while the cons might be, you know, financial in the sense that it's going to cost you more money, I think the biggest of the cons is the emotional aspect of it, where you burn out your mental capital. And then the experience that you have as well is not very fun. And the trouble becomes if you start to anchor that feeling going into the next session and then the next session. That's where it can become really dangerous. So
overtrading tends to be if you're losing, right? Like you could overtrade if you're winning, but in the most sense, you're losing because you're taking lower probability opportunities, and eventually you're going to start leading to losses. And I've been there. I've overtraded. I've had an overtrading problem, and whether I overtraded and got the break even or I overtraded and lost, I've always regretted it. No matter how much I could justify the overtrading pattern and activity in real time, I've always regretted it. Even if I've come back to break even or I made a ton of money on overtrading day, I look back and I'm like, you know, I'm not going to get away with that for too much longer. Like I've still created a bad habit and I've gotten away with it. That's if you're up. If you're down, you look at it and you're like, man, what a waste. Not only did I lose money, not only did I kill my trading psychology, I missed the real opportunity.
Yeah, that's a great point that you bring up. The fact that even if you were down and you overtraded your way to get back up, when you review that at the end of the day, and you know, I'm speaking on this from experience as well, you look at it and you're like, this was dumb. Like this was dumb. And if you really focus on it like a professional trader, you think about the longevity of it, right?
Yeah.
I got lucky this time. But can this be something that I can consistently get lucky from doing down the long run, right?
Yeah.
More likely than not, the answer is no, right? You get lucky here and there, but if you try to do that consistently, that's not going to lead to the results you want. And so that is really the major cons of overtrading is you're going to abandon your trading plan. You're going to trade with emotions, and that's going to lead to an experience that is going to drain your mental capital, your physical capital, and also it's going to drain your mindset. So I think we've harped on that enough.
Yeah. Let's talk to Peter now here.
Yeah.
Peter wanted to know about undertrading. So what are the cons of undertrading? I'll kick it off with a few. You know, staying in a fear-focused mindset. I think that if you're under trading, you're so protective of your capital that it could be a sign that you value security too much. Or, dare I say, it might be capital that you can't actually afford to risk. If you're trading with capital that you shouldn't be trading with, your kid's tuition fund, your wife's vacation money, you know, like whatever it is, then you're going to be fear-focused. So the first question is, are you fear-focused if you're under trading? Are you trading out of I don't want to lose money because I can't lose it, all right? Or are you trading out of I'm looking for the opportunity? I think that that's the biggest one is under trading is caused primarily by a fear mindset, a constant thought about I don't want to lose, I don't want to lose. And the more you think about it, the more you create that condition. And so I think that's a pretty big one. You got to ask yourself, is the capital that I'm trading with, capital that I've already kind of parted with, because you may not. There might be attachment to that money in another way, especially if you're from like a blue collar family where you got to work hard for money and you've worked blood, sweat, and tears for 3K and now it's in the market. And so you've got to overcome that because from a fear perspective, not much is going to get accomplished. Another one is, you know, if you're constantly missing opportunities, this is a big con of under trading. You miss them all the time. Now it causes FOMO. You're like, I don't want to miss anymore. The market's up 30 points. I wanted to get long. I missed it. Now I'm going to start getting long right now. You're like, oh, this is it. I missed it, but I'm not going to miss it a second time. Now you've kind of talked yourself to take on the risk at the optimal time where it's too late, right? And so a trick I have for you guys here is for under trading. If you miss a trade, pretend you got it, all right? Trick yourself into owning it. So if let's say you wanted to buy, I don't know, $15 per share of some asset or $150, whatever it is, and suddenly it's trading 180. Instead of saying, oh, I should have bought the 150. Now I'm just going to buy the 180 so I could be in, so I could right my wrongs. Look at it and say, what if I was long the 150? If I did buy the 150, would I add some at 180? And there's a good chance the answer for you would be no. So then why would you do it to begin with? And the next one I'll cover and the last one I'll hand it to Marky is some of the cons of under trading is that there's an opportunity cost of your capital. You know, every single time you're not doing a trade, that money could be doing something else. So this happens to traders who I tend to think are overcapitalized. You know, they have $50,000 in a futures trading account and are trading micros. Like, put that money to work, do something with it. And more importantly, it's your time. It's the opportunity cost of your time. The way I look at it is if I'm sitting at the computer and I'm under trading, I don't want to trade. So what do I want to do? And so that's some of the cons of under trading from my perspective.
Yeah. And I got a couple to add here. You know, one of them being that one of the cons of under trading is definitely you're putting a lot of focus on perfection. Almost,
yes.
You're almost putting too much importance on any single trade. Like you're effectively looking for the perfect setup in every single trade that you take. And, you know, the reality of the markets is that hardly ever do you get perfection. And when you do, it's often best to take the opposite side, right? As weird as it sounds. And so if you're focusing on finding that perfect setup, that's going to lead to under trading and that's going to put pressure and stress on having to be right all of the time. All right. And some of the things we often see traders or some of the things that traders that tend to under trade, what they would say, they say things like, my plan tells me to get in and I didn't, you know, when they're reviewing a trade that they should have taken, or why didn't I take that trade? And the cons here, again, it has to do with your mindset, right? Your mindset. If you're under trading, your subconscious might not necessarily believe that the plan you have in place is the right one or is the best plan for you. So it can have you doubting your trading plan as well. If you're under trading and you're not in the markets as actively as you wish to be, you might be doubtful that your plan is right for you. And, you know, like Georgie mentioned, if you're finding that you're being overly patient, or you're finding that the market's coming into your zones and you're struggling to actually take the trades, more often than not, it has to do with your mindset being that of scarcity, however you want to say it, as opposed to abundance, and that you're being protective of the capital. You're fearful of losing that capital. And, you know, just falling into that mindset can be, you know, pretty devastating. And so over trading and or under trading, you know, both of them can have negative impacts. The ones that we tend to see, or if you go on YouTube, you type in over trading, under trading, you're going to see a lot more literature on over trading. But I also think under trading is something super important, because under trading is not necessarily going to lead to your blowing the account, but it can lead to a lot of frustration and what's the term called? Like when the hamster wheel.
Like the wheels are spitting in the mud, but you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It can lead to a lot of that, which will lead to more frustration. And then that can lead to you looking for the shiny ball that's going to, you know, get you to that holy grail. So definitely two different, not two different things, but I feel like the results of overtrading and undertrading are different in the sense that one can lead to blown accounts. The other one can lead to...
Wasted
time and just kind of feeling like basically like you wasted your time. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out a better way to say it, but Georgie got it, nailed it on the head there. It just feels like wasted time.
Wasted capital or wasted time. Those are the two big things in anything where you're looking growth or career. So I just want to mention one other thing too. You know, we're going to talk about how to fix these if you're having these issues. But I also want to mention that through your career, you're never going to eliminate them.
Yeah.
There's going to be trades where you should have traded bigger, but you undertraded. Maybe you slept in. Maybe you had an argument with somebody. Maybe you're just not feeling 100% to perform. And so you have the ability to scale back and nobody's going to fire you. You don't have to score goals every night. It's the beauty of this industry. And you could still be on the team. And, you know, just because you're one or the other at any given time doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. It's when it repeatedly happens that it becomes a challenge, all right? The best traders in the world undertrade sometimes. The best traders in the world overtrade. They probably tend to overtrade, to be honest with you, but it's a balance, and you're always leaning towards realigning or recalibrating yourself with the market condition rather than, you know, oh, I overtraded, I'm terrible. But if it's happening repeatedly time and time again, then you might want to pay attention to these fixes and consider them, applying them to what you're doing, to your approach.
Exactly. And so as it relates to applying, let's have a quick chat on identifying each of these happening in real time. Because like we mentioned, hindsight is 20/20. It's very easy to look back at the end of a session and say, oh, I overtraded this, or oh, I undertraded this. But how can you get to that point in real time? How can you identify that moment in real time so that you can prevent yourself from overtrading or from undertrading? So I'll start off with overtrading. And some of the ways that you can kind of identify overtrading in real time is, like we mentioned, what does the volatility look like? All right, what are the market conditions like today? Do they call for more opportunity or for less opportunity? All right, so we like to look at volume, right? So if pre-market volume for the S&P 500 is under, say, 300,000, then I'm starting off the session thinking that it's going to be a lighter of a session. So I know right there, probably 3 to 5 trades is where I want to be at. All right, so let's say the market opens up first 10, 15 minutes. If you've already expended your 3 to 5 trades, you know, you're likely already overtrading. All right, are you outside of your daily limit for the trades? So that's something to consider. Are you outside of the daily limit for the trades? The next thing to consider is if you've taken 1 or 2 trades on the session already, review those trades. Is each of those trades according to the plan, or are you straying away from your plan? If those trades are not according to the plan and you're straying away from it, then you've got to identify why that's happening. All right. Was the first trade a loser? If yes, was the second trade because I lost the first one, or was it a valid opportunity? All right. If you can say that the first trade was a valid opportunity, you lost on it, and the second trade was a valid opportunity that you lost on, okay, that's cost of doing business. I'm not necessarily overtrading. But if you're seeing that the first trade you took was a loser and then you took a revenge trade on the second one, all right, now you're not following the plan. Now you're overtrading. So that's another way to look at it. And really the final one that I've got for overtrading is to identify in the real time is, am I trading the process, or am I trading based on the result of my last trades? So kind of similar to what I mentioned, right? Are you anchoring, and are you taking your next trades based on what happened previously, right? If you are taking your next trades based on what happened previously, more likely than not, you're overtrading, or you're starting to overtrade. And, you know, taking one trade that is not part of your plan isn't necessarily going to make or break you. I mean, if you move your stops, it might, but if you follow your plan as far as risk management, even if the trade in and of itself isn't part of your plan, it's not a make or break, but it's the trade that should give you the clue in real time as to where you're headed. If the trade that you do take that does lose isn't part of your plan, then you gotta focus. And that's the real time moment. Is, all right, this trade wasn't part of my plan, and it's being able to identify it's not part of your plan and that it might cause you to trade more. The next trade might be emotionally based instead of actual plan based or process based. So you catch yourself right there. All right, I'm looking to overtrade because of this. So I've got to stop. I've got to give myself a break, and I've got to kind of refocus, recalibrate, and come back to this and follow the rest of the plan for the session.
I love it. That's a great definition of how you identify each in real time. It's great. It got really dark all of a sudden.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was. Yeah. It felt like the lights turned off in the
office. Very weird. It just got dark all of a sudden. I have a question. What's bad vision? Like, I guess 5/5. You can see objects 5 feet. Like,
I'll tell you mine.
What's yours?
Mine is bad. Mine is, I don't even have a prescription. That's how bad.
Okay, so let's say, like, you know how they say hindsight's 20/20?
Yeah.
What if you actually don't have vision? You never really saw 20/20. Is hindsight still 20/20? A little bit of a thought experiment. But anyways.
Philosopher yeah. question.
I just, right? You know, while you were saying all that, I was tooting it 100%, but it was just burning me up to ask you that question. Maybe I should focus a little more. Let's talk about how to fix over trading. So now you guys know how to identify them in real time. How do you fix each one? So we're going to start with how to fix over trading and then wrap up the episode with how to fix under trading. And we have a few suggestions. I wouldn't say this either one of these are going to fix it for you forever, because remember, it's an ongoing and a moving target. You got to work on this daily. All right. Number one, if you're over trading, you might want to consider adding another qualifier to your setup. All right. This means you're just jumping at anything you see. You're not waiting for high probability opportunities. You're just jumping into any opportunity and hoping for the best. All right. So if you're looking for three things to happen before your trade is identified, and if you're actually looking for them, all right, then maybe add a fourth. Maybe your qualifiers are too loose. They're not really filtering out your trade opportunities. So a qualifier and a filter is the same thing. So add another filter to your setup to kind of slow down the pace of it. But I'm willing to bet that it's not the amount of qualifiers you're using. It's just that you're probably not using qualifiers.
Yeah.
And if you're not using qualifiers, then why even put a stop? Why not just get long, remove your stop, and just walk away? I'll tell you why, because you're afraid of the risk. If you're, it's funny because overtrading is, it's such an interesting thing. Like, we do it because we think we're protecting ourselves, but yeah, we're not. We're actually losing money. But anyways, add another qualifier to your setup. This will help filter out the trades, and you'll be left with fewer trades, but higher probability, higher opportunity, and more worth the hard money that you've saved.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm going to leave this one for the end of this, but the next step here on how to fix overtrading is to set a finite limit of trades daily, especially as a newer trader. If you haven't been consistent, you know, more trades isn't necessarily better for you. It's more of an opportunity for you to lose money. So as a new trader, you actually need fewer trades. So having a finite number of trades that you kind of set on the session, and again, as it relates to volatility, it's gonna be a dynamic number based on what the market conditions are looking like. But have a set number for, you know, the slower days. Maybe the days are slower. If you can identify that early on, there you go. I'm only taking 1 to 3 trades. If it's a more volatile session, you can identify that early on. All right, I'm looking to take in the neighborhood of 5 to 10 trades, and stick to that, commit to that. You know, even if there is more opportunity, if you're already increasing your finite number of trades based on that opportunity, you should be able to capture, you know, the profits that you're looking for based on the amount of trades that you set for yourself.
Beauties. And the next thing is another step or another thing you could consider doing is journaling every single trade. Oh, I skipped one.
Sorry.
That's okay. Journaling every single trade with screenshots and full explanations. So if you have 100 trades, you know, at the end of the day, you're creating more work for yourself because there's the trading work and then there's the paperwork. And you can't get away without doing the paperwork. You got to do the paperwork because that's constantly learning, evolving. Journaling is a key aspect of your trading. So if you've done 100 trades during the day, now you got to journal them all. And I remember having somebody in our workshop that came out in person to do one of our boot camps. And I did 36 trades. I'm like, well, now you're going to have to journal them all. And he laughed. He's like, ha, ha, ha. You know, I don't have the time to journal them. Like, but you had the time to do them, right? Yeah. So yeah. If you have the time to do the trades, you got to have the time to journal them. So now guess what? Every single trade you make is time away from your family and loved ones and the important things that you want to do after the market closes, because your head's down and you're journaling 100 trades with screenshots, with explanations, with a whole bunch of info, all right? You're not going to overtrade if you got to explain everyone and learn from it. That's the important part that I wanted to share with you on that aspect.
The fourth one that I got here is to replay the days of overtrading. And this one's really nice. I mean, it's not nice because it's not going to feel good when you're doing it, but the results is, is good, right? So I've done this actually. And I think one of the more eye-opening ones was the day that I discussed on this podcast several times. I think I did like 60 plus trades in that day. I actually went back and I replayed that day. And I think in the replay, I maybe qualified. How many was it? It was definitely under 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
So 1/6 yeah, was the quality factor.
So about 1/6, right? So for those that might not know what replay the days of overtrading means, it doesn't mean we have a time machine and we just go back in time and redo it. That'd be awesome.
The result won't change with this exercise.
But what the realistic way to do it is, a majority of software platforms these days have a market replay feature. And so what you can do is you can go back into the SIM environment and you can go replay that day as if you were sitting in front of your screens, you know, real time, and actually trading it as if you were sitting it and doing it real time. And so what you will find, like I found with my experiment, was that there were a lot less setups that were valid that I should have taken, there were a lot less valid setups, and a lot of the trades that I took weren't part of the plan. It was more emotional trading. It was more so, you know, considering a level, trying it, not necessarily qualifying it, getting stopped though, and then trying it. And, you know, that led to 60 plus trades on the session where there should have been only, you know, less than 10 when I did the replay. And so that's going to create a positive feedback loop for you guys. And what that's going to do is it's going to help you be more focused on the higher quality setups and your process than on the actual results. Because if you can see that, you know, even during a session where I took 60 plus trades, that maybe 10 of those were actually valid, you can see that, you know, quality is so much more important than quantity. And that should help you overcome, you know, that challenge of the over trading. And finally, the last point here on how to fix over trading, we mentioned this in the last episode, is an accountability partner. All right, because similar to how George's point on journaling every single trade with screenshots and full explanations, if you have an accountability partner, you're going to be doing the exact same thing. You're going to have to, if you do 100 trades on the session and you have an accountability partner, guess what you're going to be doing at the end of the session? You are going to be journaling 100 trades. Then you're going to be explaining those 100 trades to your accountability partner. And, you know, as humans, a lot of humans, what we tend to do is, in order to avoid embarrassment or, you know, kind of like being the fool, being made the fool, we kind of shut down about those things. Right. And so if you have an accountability partner that you're actually sharing your results with, knowing that at the end of the session, you've got to do that in the real time, it's going to help you stay focused on really identifying those high probability setups so that when you go review your trades with your accountability partner, you've got something that you're proud of. You're proud of, and it's based on your plan and your process. So those were five quick little tips there on how to fix overtrading. And now we're going to switch our focus back onto undertrading. So how to identify undertrading in real time, as well as how to fix undertrading, how you can go about fixing it. So I'll just start off with this and we'll let Georgie take on the notes on how to fix it. So how to identify undertrading in real time? Well, the way that I like to do this personally is, if I miss two valid setups on the session that I was unable to disqualify, meaning that they were trades I should have taken, but for one reason or another, I didn't take them, then that to me means I'm likely under trading. I'm likely under trading that session. And if anything, it gives me a kind of like a feedback or a flag that, hey, listen, these are two valid trades you should have taken. You didn't take them. You got to check, like, you got to check yourself before you wreck yourself. Right. And because it's under trading, it's not likely to lead to a blown account. But what it's likely to do is to get you chasing, the results you believe you should have had. Right. Because you didn't catch them when they were in the zone as per your plan. And so that is the way that I like to identify it myself personally. If there were two that I should have taken that I did not take, especially if they worked out in the direction that I was anticipating, that to me is a red flag. And that is a time for me to take a moment away from the screens, kind of review, all right, these were valid setups. Why didn't I take this? What was going on in my mind? How do I fix this so that the next trade, if it's valid in my setup, I take it, right? Because the worst thing you can do is take a trade because you missed the last one or you missed the last two. That's no longer your trading plan. That is emotional trading. So, Georgie, before we go into the steps on how you can fix it, I'm curious to hear if you've got any tips on identifying under trading in real time?
Yeah, you know, if I miss an opportunity, like you mentioned, then I'm under trade for my personal reasons. I think that like if the market, the S&P 500 moves 10 points in general, and I haven't been able to capture at least one of them.
Yeah.
I think I missed the opportunity. So it's like, it's kind of not that I have to make a point out of every 10, but if it moves 10 points without me and I didn't have even like a setup ready, or I wasn't even thinking about a setup, but it just kind of jumps 10 points, catch me out of surprise. It's usually a sign that I'm under trading, because you got a 10 point move, you're already eating up a significant amount of the day's range.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
It's like, you know, I'd like to see the market movement. That could sometimes tell me I'm under trading. Or if we smash through an overnight low or an overnight high and I'm not on board for the rotation that it keeps going, like I start to get a sense very quickly that I'm not taking advantage of the opportunity. And I ask myself, what is it? Like what's the issue? And then I've worked on the next things like I'm about to suggest for fixing under trading. But for me, that's it. It's like, has the market moved a lot without me? Another one that I usually have for under trading real time is if I didn't get the, remember I told you trick yourself. So like, yeah, let's say it's gone up 10 points and I'm not in. I look back, say, would have I gotten it? And if the answer is no, then I'm probably kind of just not feeling it. So those are two things. How much does the market move? And even if I didn't get it, could have I gotten it? And be realistic here. Obviously, you can't just say yes for all the winners and no for all the losers. Be realistic.
Perfect world.
If you missed it and you even couldn't have gotten it, then you're probably not in the right space to begin with. That's like a mental capital thing. The meter drops and I dial it down.
Yeah.
Some ways to fix under trading, Marky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a good one. You know, the first one to me is important.
It's tough, but it's good.
Yeah. Stop thinking so much, right? And trade what you see and not what you think. You know, if you've put yourself in the right position, if you've created your plan, if you've been patient enough to go through a course, if you've committed to a method, if you've worked hard to save your money and you're ready to do this, you know, it's not about thinking anymore. Do all of your thinking before you start trading. You want to think about how hard life is and how you might lose all the money trading. Think about that at like 8 a.m. or the night before if you really want to. I don't advise you doing that, but leave the thoughts outside of the trading hours. When trading starts, it's time to act. All right. So focus on what you're seeing, not what you're thinking. Get out of your head and get on the charts. That's what's important. What's in your head doesn't constitute a trade, because if you're trading what's in your head, you don't need charts. Shut her down and then just start clicking randomly on based on your thoughts. It's not going to go very well. So trust your levels. Trust the time you've spent committing to developing yourself. Trust yourself all the time that you could be with your family instead that you've been doing the courses. Trust that, all right? You are the practitioner. You're the execution specialist, the undertaker.
Yeah.
So, you know, stop thinking so much. Honestly, it could be as easy as that. You want to get muscle cell memory going. You just want to turn off the brain and activate the employee mindset. Let's just get this work done. The report's on the desk. The boss has told me I got a trade. Now let's do the trades. Roll up the sleeves. And this is the blue collar work here.
Yeah. No, I like that. And I'm glad that you brought that point up, because really the first step to fixing under trading, I think, is to kind of split your personality. And you just mentioned it beautifully there, the employee versus boss analogy. And essentially what you want to do, the easiest way to stop thinking so much, and I know this from experience because I tend to be an overthinker, and I'm still working on that. It's one of my bigger challenges with trading. And the thing that I found kind of helps is to work with that, you know, split personality almost, where you have the employee and you have the boss. And so any time that's spent worrying about this, that's the boss time. That's when you're doing your analysis. That's where you're building up, framing your trading ideas and your next best trades. But once the market actually comes into your zone and you've got the setup that you're looking for as the boss, now you're the employee and you're not even thinking at that point. You're just executing. And I found that to be a very, not easy, but I found that as someone that I guess struggles with overthinking, that's an easy way to kind of put your mind at peace and say, all right, all the thinking that I should have done before taking this trade, I've already done it as the boss. Now it's just about executing.
I love it. It's kind of like it's a fight, right? And they marquee, like, if you're going to go fighting, you're not going to go with your brain. It's fighting is not an academic sport.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go in there and have some instinct, trust yourself, trust your training. If you're going in an octagon against a guy that's 10 times better than you, now's not the time you should be thinking. You should have thought about that when you were in the gym. You should have thought about adding an extra 45 plate to your bench press. Now you can't think. Now you got to fight.
Yeah, exactly. And the one other thing I will add under this tip here about stop thinking so much is actually a great tip I learned from a book called Dollars Flow to Me Easily.
Hey.
Which we actually have an episode on. I believe it was 21 with Matt Brown.
Yeah. But money's mindset manifestation.
Yes. And one of the tips in that book was that if you find yourself constantly thinking about, not even thinking, but like constantly worrying about things throughout the day, give yourself a 15-minute part of the day, all right? 15 minutes of your day, each day where you worry, all right? Everything that you're worried about, that you spend your time thinking about, worrying about, you got a 15-minute block each day where you can do that. Outside of that 15-minute block, you're not thinking about those worries. Only in those 15 minutes can you think about do all the worrying you want in 15 minutes. But once that 15-minute block is up, you're going back to executing, right? So that was also a cool tip that I learned as someone that, you know, I tend to get stuck in my thoughts. And the ones that a lot of your thoughts, you know, you might not, this might take us on a somewhat of a tangent, but a lot of your thoughts, whether you realize it or not, are negative. I think it's 80% of the daily thoughts people have are negative. And I believe it's 95% of those negative thoughts on a daily basis are repetitive.
What a waste, right?
Yeah, what a waste, right? So if you're spending a whole day thinking about the same thoughts that are 95% repetitive, why not just consolidate that to 15 minutes? And then you can make that smaller into 10 and then smaller into 5 until you're no longer focused on the worrying thoughts and you're just focused on, you know, the opportunity, the abundance thoughts. It doesn't have to be a straight line from A to B, right? You can take steps. You can take small steps. And the first step you can take in not worrying so much and not thinking as much is to, you know, list out all the worries in a 15-minute block and then reduce that even further until you're not worrying anymore. And now you can spend all your time focusing on what? Abundance.
A good friend of mine told me, life is what happens while you're busy thinking. And that's kind of stuck with me. You know, sometimes I act too quickly and impulsively, but I pay the price for that, believe me. Number two, I think that's a great one. It's a big one for me and obviously for you as well, Mark. I would have liked to ask you some more questions and deep dive on that, but I think it might warrant an episode on its own. Number two, market replays. So, you know, when you're under trading, do the same thing as you're over trading, except this time you're not trying to prevent yourself from blowing capital next time. You're trying to get yourself into trades next time. So sometimes you haven't seen enough repetition of a successful trade to know what you're looking for. So you don't see it in real time. But if you do it in a replay in a safe environment, you're not looking to test the strategy. You're just looking to get in and find areas to get in. So with the market replay feature, if you do a couple hundred trades, now you kind of have automated the process from transitioning from thinking to doing. I think that's the hard part, is being an analyst and then doing the trade that an analyst is analyzing, for lack of better words. That'll make it more fluid. There doesn't have to be that stop moment because you look at the levels, you qualify a trade, it's going to go. And right before you click, there's that little gap in between that you can start to worry and think. And if you could narrow that gap and eventually remove it, it becomes fluid. You're going from analysis to execution. And when you're doing a replay in the market, it's going to help you narrow that gap where you usually stop to think and makes it fluid. So like, hey, I like this trade. You know, it's setting up good. NASDAQ's going my direction. This is a good support level. Click once, click twice on the DOM. All right, I'm in. Versus this is going good. NASDAQ's going up. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I should have stuck to my 9 to 5. Oh, the market's up 10 points. You could have had that.
Yeah.
Damn it, I missed the 10 points. Let me buy it now. Now you're long the top. You get stopped out 5 minutes later. Damn it. Could have had that trade.
Yeah, could have, should have, would have.
Right? And now you go from under trading to over trading.
Yeah, which we'll cover in just a moment. But I like that, you know, market replay, whether it's for the purpose of limiting yourself from over trading or to get yourself into more trades if you're under trading. I think it's a hugely underutilized tool.
Agree.
Hugely underutilized tool. And kind of on the same pain as market replays is to journal your missed trades, right? So, you know, Peter asked in this original email to us, how do I journal an under trading session? Well, the answer to that is to journal your missed trades, right?
Yeah.
And go back. Journal the missed trades, right? So you can learn a lot more about the missed trades than the ones that you actually took, right? So if you find yourself under trading, and you'll know that because you're not taking the trades at your levels when they're valid, go back and journal that. Why did you miss the trade? What were you thinking maybe at the time? I think we mentioned this in one of the prior episodes, but there's a great tool you can use, which is obviously the trading journal. But one step further, that you can actually record your screen and your audio while you're actually trading. And I believe the program is free and it's called Loom.
Yeah, it's called Loom. Yeah.
Make sure to post that in the show notes, a link to that. But what you can use this program for effectively is to watch, review almost like your game tape, right? Review your game tape. Why didn't I take this trade? What was I thinking at the time? And how can I prevent it going forward? Not necessarily prevent it, but how can I action it going forward? You know, why didn't I take this trade? Maybe I was fearful of losing. Maybe I took a trade before that lost, and I was anchoring to the loss. And as a result of that, I didn't take this one. Whatever the case is, that is how you'd go about doing the journal session after, is review the reasons why you didn't take it in real time.
And if you want to say, hey, I didn't take the trades, how do I journal them? Do step two first. Do the market replay.
Yeah.
Get the trades you were supposed to based on your approach, based on the ones you know you should have. Now that the emotionality of live trading is off and it's a risk-free environment, right? Do the trades you're supposed to in the replay and then journal those. And there's no problem. You know, there's no secret to journaling. The secret is this. You spend more time watching the screen without being emotionally attached.
Yeah.
So you're actually learning. That's the secret to journaling.
That's exactly true. That's exactly true.
And number four, all right, I like this one. You know, there are times, believe it or not, like at the beginning of the session, I struggle to put the first trade in. And it just, I don't know why. Sometimes it's like when I start a new initiative, right now I'm doing a new small account challenge where I'm trying to prove for some reason to myself. It's really hard to trade with small capital for me at this point. And so it's just a challenge that I want to do. I want to put together a small account building challenge with the steps and scaling up and everything so people could learn from it and find it hopefully helpful. It's costing me a lot of profit potential. But I'll start the session with a small size position. So if you're a futures trader, trade the micro. The micro is a $5 loss per point or $6.25 for 5 ticks. So
yeah.
Get in there, do a micro trade, get stopped out. Who cares? Don't even, like, just find the trade that you want at 9:30. Like, okay, 9:30 the bell opens and you're waiting for an opportunity. Even before the opportunity comes, just do a trade, any trade. Click the bid or the offer. Who cares? Don't set it up and get that one out of the way. It'll cost you $6.25, but it'll break the ice, switch to the full size, and now you're like, okay, I've already put a trade in the book. Now I'm just looking for high probability. The reason I suggest not waiting for a good trade to go small size is because then it's going to work. And instead of having $12, you could have had a couple hundred, 125, and you're not going to like that. And that could cause you trouble. So just shake the jitters off. All right. Just throw one on small size possible. And, you know, this helps you be prepared for the next one. Now you have a live trade in the book. It's kind of like a warm up. You know, if you're playing any kind of professional sport, your first shift, you're probably going to warm up a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I'd say one of the reasons for under trading could be, you know, trading too big of a size, right? Putting on too much, or just putting on too much of a contract size or share size that makes you feel like you can lose it.
Yeah.
And makes you feel like it has to be protected. Which can leave you being super protective of that capital, not taking any trades as a result. So position size is huge, and that's a great little tip there as far as utilizing the smallest position size, which is the e-micros. And really the last tip we've got here to fix under trading is to review your trading criteria, review your entry criteria, because it might be a little bit too restrictive. So this is actually the opposite of what you'd want to do if you're if you typically tend to overtrade. So if you typically tend to overtrade, you're going to want to add a qualifier. If you tend to undertrade, your entry criteria might be too restrictive. So you might actually want to loosen it up, all right? And if you have, say, 5 qualifiers that you need to see, maybe reduce it to 4, right? Still 4 good qualifiers. But now if you remove one of those qualifiers, so you've gone from 5 to 4, you're going to have more potential opportunities, right? And in doing so, you're not going to be as restrictive. You're not going to be looking for that picture perfect setup, because those hardly ever come. And like we said, when they do come, more often than not, they tend to be too perfect, and they end up having the opposite effect of what you would imagine them to have. So that is a quick little summary there on how to fix under trading. Stop thinking so much. Utilize those market replays to capture those trades that you should have. Journal your missed entries. See what the reasoning was behind not taking them. Start your sessions off using smaller position size and then scale up. And finally, just review that trading plan. Your entry criteria might be too restrictive. It might be just a quick change to the qualifiers and you'll be up and running.
Awesome, Marky. And you know, last thing I want to mention this episode, I mean, Peter and everyone listening, hopefully you got some good value out of this one, is that if you under trade for long enough, you're going to get upset and likely wager it all in one day, the whole account. And you're going to go from under trading to over trading. And it's very mentally and emotionally damaging and taxing. And so you also have to remember, I doubt you're going to go from over trading to under trading. You will go from over trading to under trading when you have no more margin to put more size. You got a refund. Yeah. So, you know, I'll say this. You could be in an under trading scenario one day and over trading in another. They're going to happen in your career. One-offs aren't bad, even small stretches, you know, a couple of days here and there. But if it's happening to you on a consistent basis, then you want to start applying some of these things. I don't think one day of over trading is enough for you to blow out your whole like plan and say, I'm starting scratch. You know, maybe consider some of these points, but make these changes if you're consistently under trading or over trading, or you spot that to be a pattern in your personal approach. All right. And I hope you guys have enjoyed this tips, Peter. Hopefully we've been helpful for you. And if you're a Trade Pro Academy member, or if you're a podcast listener, send us an email with these kind of situations you're having, and we'd love to help you. This podcast, in essence, is created for you, by you. And obviously we're going to prioritize our members in the community, but you know, we'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you're having challenges with and what we could work on together on this podcast. That's it for me. I'll hand over to Marky for the sign off.
Exactly. So just want to encourage you, based on what Georgie said, make sure to reach out. You know, we're going to keep everything anonymous. Obviously, Peter is not the actual name of the person that sent it. So if you're concerned about, you know, us, what is it called? Blowing out your laundry, the dirty laundry. Don't necessarily worry about that. We're here to help. So feel free to email us, podcast@tradeproacademy.com. Again, I wanted to thank you guys for taking the time to listen to today's episode. If you guys enjoy what you heard and or you found value out of it, please make sure to share it with your friends and colleagues, those that might find value from it as well. Also, if you guys enjoyed today's show and you enjoy the podcast, make sure to jump on iTunes, throw us a rating and review. We'd really, really greatly appreciate that. And until next time, guys, good luck and good trading. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mind Over Market podcast. You can find us at tradeproacademy.com.